Okay, text 8. From Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 27. Now please listen faithfully as I explain exactly how a person who has achieved twice-born status through the relevant Vedic prescriptions should worship me with devotion. Explanation. Pari Bhakti Vilas deals at length with the qualifications one needs to achieve twice-born status. A person must receive proper initiation from a bona fide spiritual master and be trained in sadachar, proper Vaishnava behavior, before he may worship the deity. It is the spiritual master's responsibility to train the disciple in all aspects of Krishna consciousness so that he can worship the deity with the proper attitude. For his part, the disciple must sincerely inquire from the spiritual master how to act properly and worship the deity in a way that pleases the Lord. Okay, so then to worship the deity here, then one needs to come to the Bhatkam V, twice born, so that means second initiation, from the bona fide spiritual master. So the first thing is one must be trained in sadachar, in proper Vaishnava behavior. Because we see that Krishna mentions that without the proper behavior, then he doesn't find the deity worship to be very satisfying. One may be very expert and do so many things, but if one is not properly behaved, then Krishna does not find the worship very pleasing. It's not that impressive. We may be very exact in our rules. We may be able to do so many things nicely, but Krishna is not very pleased with that worship. So the first thing to learn is sadachara, how to behave properly. Sad means, you know, proper or eternal, or that's connected with absolute truth, sat. So you get sadachara. It means the proper, you know, transcendental behavior of those who are who worship the Supreme Lord, the devotees of the Lord. So the spiritual master's responsibility is to train the disciple in all aspects of Krishna consciousness so that he can worship the deity with the proper attitude. So the attitude is most important. So the attitude is right, the worship was right. So all the different aspects of deity, of devotional life are necessary to be trained so that one properly chants, properly associates with devotees, properly, you know, studies Bhagavatam, hears Bhagavatam from others. Somehow or another tries to, you know, whatever one knows, tries to give that to others. Live in the holy dham, do service for the dham, and then worship the deity. So when those other four are intact properly, then we see that the deity worship goes nicely. The deity worship is only considered complete if those other four are going on nicely. So one must therefore learn the sadachar to properly behave in this way. Okay, then. And it says here, for his part, for the disciple's part, must sincerely inquire from the spiritual master how to act properly and worship the deity in a way to please that pleases the Lord. So that means that the disciple must want to know. You know, must want to know how to worship, how to perform things, how to behave properly with others, so that the Lord becomes pleased. That means the disciple must want that. Because if they don't want, then you can give so much relevant instruction, but if someone doesn't want it, then what's the use? In English, you have the saying, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make them drink. So in the Vedic tradition, you don't teach somebody to somebody who hasn't inquired. You know? That's the thing. Is therefore, you see, the preaching is not so strong in the other ages. It's just like the Lord. The Lord comes and performs his activities and makes things available, but if somebody is not interested, he just leaves it. You know, he says, don't disturb the minds of the ignorant. So he just leaves it. if the Sri Krishna will arrange that they come in contact with these bona fide devotees. And like that, then the living entity comes to contact only when he actually has an interest to come in contact. If he doesn't have an interest to come in contact, don't come in contact. So that's the point. Is that we must want to know. And if we want to know, then one can speak. One can speak to them and tell what needs to be heard. Like that. But you can only speak according to how much they're willing to hear. But so much is there, but it's just how much we are willing to hear, accept. So in the Vedic age, then if somebody came and inquired from a teacher, then they would teach. And they would just teach what they inquired on. They wouldn't teach beyond that. Student hasn't inquired on the thing, the teacher won't teach on it. Because unless there's interest to know, even you teach them, they won't. It'll just go into one ear out the other. Right? So the whole idea is that they would wait for them to inquire. Like just one day a student asked, oh, what are these stars? Only once they ask, then you start teaching them about astrology. You know? Astrology, astronomy, like that. But unless they ask, you don't teach them. Mm-hmm. Unless they inquire something about what's the meaning of this word, or then you don't teach them any grammar or any vocabulary. Like that. But at the same time, the teacher would present things in a way to create inquisitiveness. He would say something that would just kind of like take it only so far. And then naturally you want to know what's more. So then the student would inquire, and then at that point you could go more. But they would do it in such a way to create that interest to hear. Otherwise, it wasn't done. So that's an old tradition. They would be hit like that. And in this way, then they had less students. Because the students, if they're not inquisitive, they come for a short time. And then they go away. So, there's no... The student doesn't feel overburdened that the teacher's trying to teach him so many things he doesn't want to learn. And the teacher's not overburdened with students who have no interest. The Vedic system is very, very natural. Modern system, you have to go through X amount of years of school. Everybody. But some people have no interest, academic interest. They feel it's a waste of time. The teachers feel it's a waste of time. You know? But somebody's decided they should go through it. Well, they have interest in other practical areas. Like, let's say someone's into music. He'd rather just sit in his basement and practice music all day rather than go to the school. So in the Vedic age, that person would be practicing music all day, but under the guidance of a teacher. So then they would become very expert in music. Like that. Otherwise, then they wouldn't teach them. So so the point here is that the student must ask, because otherwise how far you can teach? You can teach them something and nobody learns. I've seen so many years that it's either someone's inquisitive or you can enforce it. Right? And so enforcing you can only do on certain, practical things. Not so much in knowledge, it's just behavior, Don't put this here. And if somebody puts it there, then you have some system of follow-up that you know that they put it there, and you catch them and ask them why they put it there. Or there can be some restriction of facilities because they keep putting it there. Like, I remember I was trying to clean up where the boys were staying in the back of the house. So we had this system of MI. It was all beds, everything was packed up, the rest of the house was open. There was no furniture in the house. So then that would allow that the whole rest of the house could be used for many things. You sleep there at night. You know, you just sleep, you have mats on the floor, sleep on the floor, roll up your beds, put them away. Then in the day, you could use it as classrooms. And you could do many, many things there. Well, if you have beds and this and that everywhere, you can't do, you can only use it for sleeping. So, but they used to keep the back where they keep all the beds and all the stuff a little bit missing. You know, they'd hang their cloth here and there and, you know, like that. So then, I'd been staying for a long time. Clean up, showing, and, you know, pressing, and they'd clean up a little bit, you know, and then later in the day, the next day, be back to status quo, you know. So then one day, I just thought, oh, this is crazy. So I went through and just whatever was improperly kept that I was always complaining about, I just picked them all up and put them in a big pile in the front of the house. It's all right there. But then whoever it was that put their cloth back there, they're supposed to take it and put it in the locker, not just take it off and throw it on the floor, hang it on a line. You put it back in your locker, and only on the lines would be, you know, gunshots or, you know, like that kind of thing. The boys, for convenience, would just take off, you know, the cloth and hang it there and put on the gumption and go here and there, or, you know, hang things in different places. They just collected all that, put it all in one place. So now it was more difficult to walk from the back of the house all the way to the front of the house to pick up their dhoti than it was from the back of the house to their locker to take out the dhoti. So then back got cleaned up because they saw it was more trouble to not keep it clean. There was more trouble to not keep it clean than to keep it clean. But that doesn't necessarily create the value of cleanliness. See, that's the thing. You've imposed discipline. You can see it's clean. Others can come and appreciate how nice and clean it is, but it doesn't mean that the students themselves have learned the value of cleanliness. Now, if it's like that and you can maintain that discipline for years, then maybe by habit it'll become there or just become accustomed to it. But they may follow like that, but they may not teach that to the next generation. You know, their students, even like that, they may not teach that to. So you have to somehow or another get across to them, this is the value. And the best is that they want to know about it. They want to know what's best, how to properly behave, what is the best. So either you have a student who's very qualified that is naturally very inquisitive, or you have to try to create that inquisitiveness in them. Like that. Then one learns nicely. So here the point is that the is we see that, yeah, that the that how someone who has achieved the twice born status through relevant Vedic prescriptions, right, just attaining twice born status because the temple needs a cook or a pujari, then the worship may not be so pleasing to the Lord. So if you've done it by following relevant Vedic prescriptions, it means properly follow the sadhachar, you properly follow the rules and regulations of devotional service, then we're able to please the Lord very nicely. Then we're able to please. So that is the point being made here. Then text time. A twice born person. Right, so also this other point here, now listen faithfully. Krishna said, please listen. It means it's good for you. You know, I can say, please listen faithfully. You know, and then one wants to know why. What is the benefit of this and that? But please saying, please. He's not saying you have to. It means please listen, because why? You'll be benefited. You don't have to listen. It doesn't mean don't, that you won't be benefited. People that you cannot listen and not be benefited. The Krishna would rather have you benefited. The benefit. So then he says, please listen. Like that. Otherwise, there's plenty of people in hell and all kinds of disturbing situations because they didn't listen. Not have no interest in us. Like that. So Krishna is saying, will you please listen? And one has to have faith. Because in the beginning, we don't fully understand the process. So there must be some faith. Faith that we see that this is good, we've heard something, we find it good, so we want to follow that. So that faith that creates our ability to associate properly with devotees, sadhu sangha, and to follow the rules and regulations properly, bhajya kriya. So technically, bhajya kriya means initiation, after initiation. So what's happening before initiation is sadhu sangha. And that's where we learn about sadhachara and all that, is in sadhachara. And then we practice, and we practice it, but it becomes very serious at bhajana kriya. So we hear. So we have to have faith that we're going to hear what they say is good and relevant and something that we want to do. But faith is very important. Yes.
You know, you're just saying these are the great principles. Nowadays, you know, look, you look practically at school, everyone, as you mentioned, everyone has to go to school. So, the point comes that you said you just have to create inquisitive mood. Because you've got no other option. Or what can you do? Or you do it in the other way, where they don't really learn anything.
Just the point is, if you want a very good discipline or somehow or another an enthusing them, so they just like to do it as they like to. And they're benefited to some degree. But it's the problem that comes is that then when they're not around that teacher, then their enthusiasm goes down. So you can use this system, so just enthusing them because they want to do it with you, they like you. Or you have strict things of discipline, so they figure it's better to follow and do nicely than to not follow, and it's more trouble that way. But those things being done for a long time, then you may develop habit. But until someone becomes inquisitive, you don't actually get value. Understand? Habit, you just do. You know, like you put a door in a particular place and you put the doorknob on one side of the door. Everybody's for years has been going through it like that. Now you somehow or another change the door and put the doorknob on the other side. You'll see that for, you know, many days or weeks, so keep walking up to the right side of the door and, you know, there's no worse than knob, you know, bumping into it. Because, you know, you just simultaneously turn the knob and push. So you go to put your hand and bump into the door, but nothing happens because the knob's on the other side. So, you've just created habit here. You haven't created value. Right? Because value comes from thinking. This is what is missed in the modern culture. Is they like to create some thinking, but not for the purpose of necessarily creating a specific set of values. You think, and you kind of come up with your own. But that's still speculative. So it's a lower level. At best, you know, and that's the most, they will consider that like, you know, some of their best students, ones who can speculate along the same lines as the teacher. Like, I noticed that started happening, at least in America, from like 7th grade, now maybe it comes earlier, but in the 7th grade, then they would start giving you all kinds of, you know, interesting readings and different things, books and stories and novels and that. That there was the purpose of creating some thinking. For creating some thinking. And then they would bring up, create a discussion, and everybody would have some say. And as long as they kind of said a few things and were, you know, a little bit thoughtful, the teacher thought it was, you know, a valuable. They've done their work. You know, they got, you know, more than one brain cell, you know, firing at one time, and the synapses were doing something, and then they figured it was good. So just basically it starts to create only that much, but getting into values is not important, you think. So it's the contemplation is all they're interested in. So You hear from the teacher. That's the basic. Everybody must hear. And even nowadays, they say that they try to, you know, some of the newer things, rather than hear, you try to create something in the student, get them interested, or get them, let them do what they want to do. But, you know, with the idea that it'll create inquisitiveness. Because they see if you just do shravana, just hearing, you may not develop nicely. You've heard so many things, but you can't apply it. Then, so they think, well, the person has to think about it and have some interest. So then, well, let them do this or that, or many, many things that they try in some of the more, you know, experimental educational areas. Different teachers find that different things they get to work, and it creates some kind of interest, some thought. But then the problem with that, so, and then they get them to think, and they may do some things good, but then they don't necessarily learn. They learn backwards. Finally, they figure out they need something to come back around. It works, you know, in that way. So some teachers will complain, no, first they should hear, then they can contemplate. Others say they should contemplate, and then they may want to hear. But the one creates the proper respect for authority, hearing first, but it may not create any inspiration, unless the teacher is able to give that. And if you take the, try to make them think first, and then we'll create the interest to hear, then that may make them very speculative, and they're not really dependent upon the authority. And what you're thinking doesn't necessarily have to fit in any standard. Right? If you hear first, means there's a standard, there's some formulas, there's some outline, some already pre-worked out material, some strategy, some methodology. And you learn that, then you next step is learn how to apply it. And you should become inquisitive about it. So you have a standard. And then the other ones don't have a standard. You have some things and it's kind of like as whatever you like to put together, so it's more speculative. But best you can come up with some speculative values. Because there's no real standards. You know, other than just you should think. But if they're being so liberal in that everyone should be able to do what they like, then whether they think or not, why do you want them to think? Because that means, so the teacher doesn't want to impose upon him what they have to say. So it's, you know, you it's teacher-centered where it's just, you know, the teacher says. We'll make it student-centered. But why we should impose our authority that it should be student-centered? You know what I'm saying? In the same thought pattern that creates that. The same liberal thought pattern that, no, they should be, but why is it you think the way you've thought and you're going to structure it that it should be more free like this is the way that the students should be put through? What's the difference? It's just something different.
Still teacher-centered.
Yeah, still teacher has thought. The teacher is imposing upon the students a student-centered thing. So there's still the imposition. Because the point is that's the way, that's the relationship. The teacher teaches, the students do. Now, how he wants to do it, that's another thing. But one has to understand what one's dealing with. So in any case, both these, unless you get deep thinking about and practice, thought and practice at the same time, where you see, you've heard about how something is good and useful. You see it in practice that's good and useful. You inquire about it, try to understand it more, and then you yourself feel that this is good and useful. Then it becomes value. So only when you hear, you inquire and you practically imply, then only do you get value. Right? So we must listen with faith. Otherwise, then one doesn't have any standards. And one cannot hear properly from the teacher. It says listen faithfully. So you listen first. Then what do you do? Then how they should worship with devotion. So you listen with faith. And then what we will do, how someone should worship with devotion. So it will be the application.
and inquire in the middle.
Yeah, and the acquire means you have to be inquisitive, because after you hear, then you inquire how to do it better, what is this meaning, what does that mean? So this applies to any branch of knowledge. So here Krishna is pointing out in the deity worship, you have to have that. But you see in philosophy, Krishna is saying to Arjuna, touch Trinu, listen, now listen, I'm going to say something, now you listen. So it's everything. You want to teach Ayurveda, the student has to be inquisitive. They have to have faith that the teacher knows what they're talking about. They have to learn the proper attitude, because if you want to be an Ayurvedic doctor, you have to have a proper attitude. You know, even if you want to be a patient, you have to have the proper attitude. Right? And then they have to follow the proper instructions, the Vedic standards of behavior and all these things. Then they will be able to apply the medicine. You know, or the same, you take the martial arts, you have to have faith that the teacher knows what he's doing, like that, and then you must learn the proper behavior, because King in that doesn't have any old behavior, he has a very proper behavior, and then he will apply in his governing, like that, he may have to use his martial talents. That. So in this way, then it becomes, it's the same principle. So Krishna's pointing that out, is now someone who has that proper faith, they listen, they learn the proper culture, then they can worship with to please him. Because then that's devotion. Trying to follow the rules to please Krishna, that's devotion.
I mean, that's part, how does someone generate that inquisitive, because that seems to be the key to the whole thing. One thing just to teach, but is there some technique? Or is it something?
A lot is association. Association is very important, and explain everything. What happens many times that I've seen is children, when they're small, they're very inquisitive. But they can, you know, there's a saying in English, a fool can ask more questions than a wise man can answer. No, I don't even think it's a good thing in English. I think it's Chanakya needs it. You know? So little kids can ask, you know, unlimited questions. So many times what happens is the parents or whoever else are around, their older brothers and sisters, get sick of it. So they just tell them to shut up. You know, why ask so many stupid questions, right? Yeah. So then the kid loses interest in being inquisitive. And his brain just kind of shuts off, and then you just get down to what, you know, mommy and daddy want you to do, you know. You play with the toys and you know, eat things and smile, you know, whenever you're supposed to smile, and, you know, like that. And then you just get into, when you get tired of that, and you go out and do that with your friends, like that, and move on to your home life. So the whole thing is, it's the Vedic thing, you know, first of all, you try not to squash that in the beginning, you know. Because the more you explain, means in explaining properly, you know, not like a, you know, if something goes down over there and then it comes up on the opposite side, you know, you don't tell the stuff, well, yeah, it gets over there and it swims around and all that, and if it comes up, you know, so why it takes so long, because it takes a long time to swim, you know, you've got to swim all the way across half the planet, you know, like that, and, you know, things like that, you know, so it's just, you avoid that kind of, you know, those explanations.
Hot air is the coldest thing, and as hot as it comes out, it sinks and goes down.
Oh, yes, yes, these explanations. Yes, these are all. Yeah. Then does he explain how it gets lit again in the morning? So that I guess Calvin doesn't inquire about that one. Right, so it goes up, runs out of steam, cools down, goes down the other side, disappears into the ocean. Like that. So one tries not to squash these things. Then by explanation of different things, you explain everything. Because many times what you see is the teacher, the parent, the administrator, the manager, it's very easy. They just tell you, do this, and they don't want you to ask why. They just want it done. because they're practical. They just want it done. So why ask? If you just say no, you just do it, it'll work. But the whole idea with the teacher is that you should ask. I mean, of course, something has to be done right this second. You can ask afterwards. You know, then you say, okay, but now we'll discuss afterwards. The whole idea is if the particular time, if now is not the proper time to discuss something, you just say, later we'll discuss. So then the student knows that they can ask later. And that way, then it encourages the inquisitiveness. That you have to explain everything, say why this is there, and then ask them, do you understand why? Why? Or other things, you just ask. Something like that, like discussing before with the clothes. Then you just go, who here can tell why it's good that we put all our stuff in our locker and don't leave it around? And you'll find students can say so many things they're pretty than really intelligent. You know, many times you'll find the worst kids know the most because they heard it the most. And it's interesting, I've seen sometimes kids that are really good that never get in trouble, never do anything wrong, always doing basically the right thing. Many times they don't know things. They just did it, they saw someone else did it, they just did it. They have no idea, they've never heard why or anything, you know, to explain it. You just took it for granted that they knew because they were doing it. They were just very nice. And you ask them, and sometimes they don't know at all. Why, yeah, it's the real bum, he knows everything. You know, he could give a whole lecture on it. He's heard a lecture many times. You know? That's amazing. So, you explain nicely and try to get them, and in this way try to somehow now they get some inquisitiveness out. Or explain goals, try to, you know, give visions. But the teacher must be tolerant and patient. That's why Brahma works by those qualities of patience and tolerance, because they teach, but it's not that the students absorb and do. They just don't. While you see that the, you know, so for managers and this and that, it's got to be when they, it's just got to happen. But with the teachers and that, you got to give it time. It may take you years. You know? It may take you years before you get what you want. But you have to have the patience to wait. You know, and as long as there's progress, and it's progress in a, you know, good enough speed, then it's worth waiting for. It seems to be waiting. A Christ-born person should worship me, his worship of the Lord, without duplicity, offering appropriate paraphernalia in loving devotion to my deity form, to a form of me appearing upon the ground, in fire, in the sun, in water, or within the worshipper's own heart. Explanation. The Lord can be worshipped in a variety of forms and elements, and for each of these there is appropriate paraphernalia to offer. Sannyasi mendicants often worship the Lord on the ground by drawing a yantra on the earth, chanting various mantras and offering water and flowers. One worships the Lord. One worships the Lord in fire by performing the fire sacrifice, especially the Pancharatri Tihoma, or day of fire sacrifice performed in very large temples. One worships the Lord in the sun by chanting the Brahma Gayatri mantra and by offering argya. One worships the Lord in water either by performing tarpana, offering water oblations while standing in a sacred river or lake, or by worshiping him in a suitable pot, kalasha, with upacharas. One may worship the Lord within one's own heart by manasa puja, worship within the mind. But of all acceptable methods of worship, worship of the Lord's deity form is considered the best, because in this form the Lord bestows his mercy most readily by revealing his attractive qualities, because the worshipper can render the deity form the greatest variety of services, all of which are easily performed. So it says here, without duplicity. So it should be that what you're offering you have some meaning, that you want to please the Lord. And when you say that you want to surrender and all these things, you mean it. You're not just saying it because you know you should say it, but you're saying it because you actually want it. And then when it's not withered, when things, how they develop, like the Pancha might complain to the Lord. the Pandavas might complain, well, we're devotees to the Lord, how is it that we ended up out in the forest for 14 years? You know, like this. Sometimes it may, you know, one may think like that. Or, you know, why is it that our wife would try to insult her in the assembly, you know, like this. So many different things. Why they've taken our right to the throne, or why they've taken our land, or, you know, all those things you may say. But the point is the Lord has His plan, and according to that plan, things develop. And if we have that faith in the Lord, then things will go on. So that duplicity means that we offer these things with the idea to please the Lord, and we ask the Lord to accept, and that He may do so in however He likes, and reciprocate with us however He likes. Whatever pleases Him, because He knows us better than we know ourselves. If we just know this lifetime, we're just like watching something happen. You know, like there's a television show, it just happens. Right? But we don't realize that we already did everything previous lifetime, and, you know, got everything together and all that, and produced, you know, put the whole thing together and directed it, all these different things. Then in this lifetime, we're watching it. We're like, wow, this is amazing. You know? Like, we're very intelligent. We think, oh, I'm so intelligent. But in previous lifetimes, you've done something, so this lifetime, we're intelligent. Or we're having so many difficulties. It's because in previous lifetimes, you did something to create the difficulties now. So Krishna knows this better. And because of this, then He is able to deal. Right? He then deals with us in such a way to bring us closer to Him, if that's what we want. If we don't want, then Krishna can arrange so many things. Krishna can arrange so many things. Like that. Now here we see that there's so many forms of the deity. And these forms, one can worship the Lord. But you can see that most all of these forms are all temporary. Only the Archamurti is permanently installed. Like that. The others are temporarily installed. You draw a yantra on the ground, or sometimes they would take sand and go to the beach and do these on the sand, like the leaf forms, and do worship there. And then after that, then, you know, they would be so again washed back into the ocean. Like that. So these are all temporary. But the Archamurti is there, and we can render service, and there's always that reciprocation is there. Is there any questions on this? Text 10. The worshipper should first purify his body by cleansing his teeth and bathing. Then he should perform a second cleansing by smearing the body with earth and chanting both Vedic and Tantric mantras. Explanation. The purification of mud referred to here can be understood in two ways. Prithvisnanam, after making the body wet, and before final rinsing, one smears the body with mud using it as soap. And two, urdhvapunja, applying tilak markings to the body. Application of tilak is considered a second purification after a bath. Yeah. In other words, one is very clean for doing these things, both externally and internally. So the point is that when we worship the deity, we must be very, very properly clean. Clothes must be clean, bath and all that. I think that's coming up with the next part. But so this means that one is going through these stages that we described before in Abhigamana. Waking up, you know, remembering the spiritual master, then cleansing the teeth, bathing, like that, and then afterwards then putting on the tilak and all these things. This aspect of Abhigamana is mentioned here. Then in text 11 we see the other part is mentioned. Fixing the mind on me, one should worship me by his various prescribed duties, such as chanting the Gayatri Mantra at the three junctures of the day. Such performances, when joined by the Vedas, and purify the worshipper of reaction to fruit of activities. Explanation. This and the previous verse constitute a summary of Abhigamana, the first limb of Panchanga Puja, worshiping five aspects. So this puts these two verses on all the things that we do before going to the temple. Just in a very, short form. Now, these such performances, it says, are enjoined in the Vedas to purify the worshipper of reactions to fruit of activities. Because in the beginning, we're not necessarily pure that we're performing everything as pure bhakti. We're performing devotional service, but we still may have material desire. It's still mixed with karma agyan. Still has that aspect of may have that aspect of sakam instead of nishkam, without desire. Sakam is wisdom. So sakam means bhukti, mukti, siddhi, like this. You want sense enjoyment, you want liberation, or you want knowledge, yogic siddhis, go to the heavenly planets, any of this. This is all sakam. Many times we think of sakam as simply, gross aspects. Subtle aspects are not. Because in the modern culture, anything subtle is considered spiritual. Anything on the mental platform is considered spiritual. Like if someone does something with the mind, they'll think it's spiritual, it's subtle. Astrology or some psychology, it'll all be considered spiritual because it's subtle. But here it's pointing out that gross and subtle, it's material, it's all, there is some gain, desire for some fruitive gain. Though your gain cannot be going to the heavenly planets, it may be coming free from material contamination, but it still may have that material quality. So the whole point is that by performing these activities of Abhikamana, you purify yourself of the reactions of these. So that you can, by being purified, you come to the point where you can actually start offering things of devotion. That's what you want. You want to offer things of pure devotion, you can actually do that. Does that make any sense? In other words, if we don't follow the Vedic rules and regulations, how are we going to purify ourselves? Because right now, we see things externally. We're either dealing with the body or the mind, and we're engaging that. And our body, mind, and words, we're engaging, but we only know material activities. We don't know, we can't just sit down and chant Hare Krishna all day. So we have to engage our body, our mind, and words in activities that are in connection to Krishna. And if the activity is done for pleasing Krishna, then it's spiritual, considered a spiritual activity. But we have to perform the activity, so we must follow these Vedic rules. Same time as to the degree that we connected to Krishna, to that degree we're getting so much spiritual benefit. And because it is connected to Krishna, that what is lacking, what may have some material tinge, is being purified because it's being engaged in Krishna's service. Right? Just let's say we like to drive cars. Right? If we drive cars, we get material reaction. But now if we drive a car for Krishna, then that desire to drive the car becomes purified because now we're driving for Krishna. And it is service to Krishna, right? So to that degree that we have devotion, we're either being purified by it, or it's devotion to Krishna. So in the beginning, it'll be, I like to drive cars. Okay, I can do it for Krishna, great. It's like, what is it? Rat deka kola becha. I see the Ratha and I sell bananas, and I get two things at one time. You understand that analogy? No, okay, let's put it into words you can understand. killing two birds with one stone. Yeah, okay. So I'm getting two things done at once.
But what was the two things? I don't understand.
I said rat deka kola becha. I have some bananas and I want to sell them. So then I go to the Rath Yatra festival because there's tons of people there. So, you know, you sell bananas for these people. So now I'm getting two things at once. I'm getting the benefit of seeing the Jagannath Rath Yatra. At the same time, I'm selling my bananas to the trap. So that's the at least the Bengali, the Sattvic version of killing two birds with one stone. I see the rocks and I sell my bananas. I do too. So like that. So the devotee in the beginning is saying, great, I can drive for Krishna. And so he drives for Krishna. So to that degree that he's actually doing it to please Krishna, that becomes bhakti, you know, pure bhakti. And to that degree that he's engaging in Krishna service, he's becoming purified by that. Right? By performing the activities, the Vedic rules, means do your activities, your dharma, for Krishna. Right? So if you have the ability to drive and you're driving for Krishna, then you're following the rules, doing your nature for Krishna. So Krishna says, I preserve what you have to carry what you lack. So Krishna takes that part that is done for him, even though it may be small, and the part that is not done for him, he doesn't worry about that. He purifies us. And by that purification, slowly, slowly, you start to see that the amount that we're driving to please Krishna is greater than the amount that where I like to drive is less. Until it comes to the point of, you know, whether I drive or not doesn't matter to me. If I can please Krishna by driving, I drive. If Krishna doesn't, I don't. You know, then there's no need. Then it's whatever Krishna wants. You understand? So this is what it means here. It means performances are joined by the Vedas and purify the worshipper of reactions to fruit of activities. Because otherwise, if you're not doing it for Krishna, there will be a fruit of reaction, either good or bad. There must be. You perform an activity in the material world with material desire, you will get a reaction. Right? When there's time, in the modes, and those two mix, you get a reaction. Right? That's karma. Karma means time and modes mixed. So time means movement. So when there's activities under the influence of the three modes, you get karmic reaction. So now, if there is movement, but no modes, then that's nothing material. And if you take those activities of the modes and engage that in Krishna service, even though we may still be influenced by those modes, then Krishna, he purifies that part. The part that's done purely is accepted, and the other part he'll correct, he'll adjust, he'll purify us in such a way that we come to the point of properly doing things just to please Krishna.
And that's what this comes. With that mentality,
if you're engaging to please Krishna, it's your duty, you have the nature, you realize the nature, and so out of duty you're doing it, that's nishkama. When you still have the desire, you want to do this because you like to do it. You know, means in other words, you do it whether you're doing it for Krishna or not. Then that's sakam. It's just on the priority, that's all. The line between sakam and nishkam is very, they look exactly the same. Yeah. In other words, the kanishta basically it's sakam, but it doesn't have to be. It could be nishkam also. Just means that there'll be a lot of conditioning. But the desire to please Krishna, do it for Krishna, may be a stronger element, and then we'll become very quickly purified. But you generally see the sakam aspect is more strong. In the Kanishka, with the Madhyam, it starts to clear. And with the Uttam, then it's all been done for Krishna. No, very little is
may not be, and that's being purified. Bhagavatam says, by hearing regular hearing, then all the reactions and everything become reduced down to practically nil. It's practically nil, it doesn't say nothing. It's practically nil. Okay. So that difference between practically nil and nothing, then that is corrected in Gokul. Like that. In other words, within this body, you can only purify it a certain amount. That's it. Means if we are coming from a conditioned state. You know, like that. So you can only purify it. It's practically nothing. So it won't be considered. And then those fine things are removed in Goku. So this is points out that Krishna is saying, be qualified, and then you perform this abhigamana. In other words, become qualified by association with devotees, with faith, hearing from them. Then come to the platform of Bhajana Kriya. Then now you're going to do this aspect of abhigamana, you know, of preliminary activities of deity worship, purifying oneself and chanting Gayatri and all these different things. Then Krishna goes on. Here, the deity form of explanation. Listen, the previous. Here. The deity form of the Lord is said to appear in eight varieties: stone, wood, metal, earth, paint, sand, and the mind. Mind or jewels. Sand would be on the ground. Explanation. The different materials having various degrees of durability must be taken into consideration when choosing a material to make a deity for installation and worship. In addition to the materials mentioned in this verse, Srila Prabhupada authorized synthetic materials to make deities. Unfortunately, synthetic materials used to make deities in this country have proved less durable than originally hoped. And then there's a thing about worshipable pictures here. One of the eight kinds of deities is the two-dimensional painted picture. And then he gives an He mentioned here that hand-painted pictures are preferable to photographs of Jesus, or photographs of paintings. But anything is good. The devotee may worship the picture Murti with various upacharas, just as he worships a three-dimensional Murti. Although the pujari cannot physically bathe and dress a picture Murti, nonetheless, he may perform the worship in a simpler or elaborate manner, as described in chapters 3 and 4 of volume 1. Particularly in small temples and homes with a picture to the picture, a devotee may perform such worship. And in a temple preparing to install deity, the devotees may worship the picture in preparation and practice for the anticipated full deity worship. Yeah, so here, eight kinds of deities: stone, wood, metal, earth, which is generally like a clay deity or that. They're generally temporarily installed. Paint, which means a picture, a painted picture. Sand, which means you draw on the ground. The mind, you do Manasa Puja, or jewels. You may actually have a deity made out of jewels. It doesn't have to be. Some devotees said that they've seen them. You know, crystal or emerald or deities. Small, not very big, 2-3 inches high, but solid jewel, you know, like that, made out of one big jewel, like that. So any of these could be done. And then here he points out that of this, for the beginning, the painted or the worshipable picture is the best, because in there, then one can practice doing all these things very, very nicely until one's attained a very good standard. So the worship of the painted pictures is very good. It's one of the eight main forms. This is directly Krishna's saying. The deity form of the Lord is said to appear in eight varieties. So that means the if you have a picture, the deity appears in that there. So you're not just worshiping the picture, you're worshiping the deity. Like that. Any questions on that? Otherwise it's late. Okay. So tomorrow. tomorrow we'll continue with text 13. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.